From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2011 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, and I'm really glad you can join us this afternoon. Before we get into the program this afternoon, I need to let you know that our topic today was going to be loyalty, but because of the weather last Thursday, we had to reschedule our taping for the program. Normally, we tape our programs on Thursday. They air on Tuesdays here at 7 o'clock. But that program on loyalty will air next week, and our guest for that program, Dr. Gary Geisler from ULR, a professor in marketing here, he'll be speaking from the middle generation. One of our students, Mason Collar, will be speaking from the younger generation. And a longtime TV personality here in Little Rock, Dave Woodman from KARK, will be our older generation guest. That'll be a terrific topic on loyalty. So join us then for that for sure. But since the weather was our problem this week, I thought, hey, that's a good time to bring back the program we did way back in 2007 on weather forecasting. So this evening we'll rebroadcast that program. Our guest, speaking from the younger generation, was Scott Larimore. He was with the Weather Channel at the time. KATV's Barry Brandt was our middle generation guest. And those of you from the Midwest and the Chicagoland area, you may remember the name of Harry Volkman. He was our older generation guest. He used to be with WBBM and a long time with WGN. So in light of our recent weather we've just had all through this winter here being extra cold, I thought it'd be a really good time to kind of bring that program back. So I hope you enjoyed that this evening. And I do want to remind you, if you'd like to listen to the podcast of this program, as well as many of our other past programs, you can catch that at our website at yttshow.org. Also, our programs are podcast on iTunes. So let's go back to 2007 now with our discussion on weather forecasting with Scott Larimore, Barry Brandt, and Harry Volkman. Good afternoon and welcome to the February 6th, 2007 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here on KUAR Public Radio in Little Rock. Glad to have you guys with us here. Before we get into the program here today, I do want to remind you that you'll be able to listen to the longer version of our program if you go to KUAR.org and click on podcasts, and you'll be able to pick up this program as well as all the other programs we do. But our topic today is weather forecasting, and I've got some great guests with me here. And actually, I normally don't mention the day we record. We will be recording this on Groundhog's Day. And this particular day is a very important day in weather, as every day is, really. But in addition to being Groundhog's Day, what I imagine most of my weather guys here would just as soon not talk about, we also have had the IPCC report that came out of France on global warming, a very important document that people are talking about today, as well as the storms that came into Florida earlier today, the tornadoes. It's a big weather day, and that's the topic we're talking about here today. In fact, I think most of us, as we're listening, probably start the day trying to figure out what the weather is, or we go to bed at night watching the weather forecast. And some of the people that I have on the program here today are, if you're from different parts of the country, you probably know these names. We'll start right here in Little Rock. Speaking from the middle generation, here in the studio with me is Barry Brandt. He's over at KATV. I'm sure most of our people in the Little Rock area around our region are well aware of Barry's involvement on television weather reporting. How long have you been with KATV now?
I've been there for 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
And in Little Rock for 20 years.
Yeah, he's speaking from that middle generation. Joining us from Itasca, Illinois, which is really closer to the Chicagoland area, I have two guests that are coming in on the older generation. And if you're from the Midwest part of the country, both of these names you probably have heard. I know for sure you've heard of one of them. That's Harry Volkman. He was the Fox WFLD television and radio person there in weather for a number of years. Got his start with KOTV in Oklahoma. Is that right, Harry?
Tulsa,
Oklahoma. Right. 50. Right. And then where I first heard you was on WGN in Chicago when I used to live up there. And I understand that you were probably one of the very first people ever had the moniker of a meteorologist.
Yeah, that's right. And I was Oklahoma's first TV meteorologist in 1950.
Yeah, it's going back a long time in weather. We'll get into that in just a minute. And your good buddy, Frank Wachowski, is here with us also. He's at Midway Airport. He's been there for how long, Frank?
I've been in the city here all my life, and that officially I took over Midway's observations in October of 1980 when they made O'Hare Field the official station.
Mm-hmm. And then joining us from Atlanta, Georgia, is Scott Larimore. He's with the Weather Channel, the radio division there. What is your title there, Scott?
I'm a senior meteorologist for the Weather Channel.
We've got some terrific people here to talk about weather, and I kind of would like to get started with you, Harry. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, you're the first person I guess I ever saw that was involved on television weather forecasting, except for another guy by the name of P.J. Hoff.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the days of weather forecasting, even before you got started?
When I came to Chicago, P.J. Ahoff was the number one man here. He had come here in 1955. He was extremely popular, and he drew cartoons on the weather.
What was a typical weather forecast in that in those 50s era time, and how did you get your information to even make a forecast?
Well, the typical forecast in those days was partly cloudy with little change in temperature. And usually you were right more than half the time. So, whatever. I got all my weather at first from shortwave radio because I was not allowed to get into the weather office to take the information off the teletype machines, which we used then, because I was making my own forecasts. And they said, if you're making your own forecast, you can't use official government information. So I used my World War II Army training in Morse code to copy official weather reports from the shortwave bands, and I was able to get enough to draw my own weather maps and get my own observations, and that's how I went on the air. I spent hours collecting data. The same kind of data today would take just a matter of seconds to acquire because you get instant access on the computer. But in those days, we didn't have the computers. So I collected it all, plotted it, analyzed it, and drew the isobars on the weather maps. And then I went on the air and did the same thing.
You drew the isobars by hand?
Yeah, because when you're training in meteorology, you learn how to draw all the lines on the maps. You learn to plot, you learn to analyze, and then to draw. You draw your cold fronts, your warm fronts, all that kind of stuff. You label all the air masses, which isn't something we do anymore today, like a polar air mass or a tropical air mass, and they're wet or dry and so forth. So it was a big, huge job to collect data.
Where did you get the data? I mean, did you have radar available, or what did you have?
No, we didn't get radar until 1956 when I was in Oklahoma City. What we did was we got an old World War II surplus radar. It was called CPS-9, which they used to have in airplanes. We got one of those and set it up in the station and picked up our own radar signals because we had technicians and engineers at the station that could know how to operate that kind of thing. And so we showed a very crude black and white radar on the air. There was no such thing then as Doppler, and there was no color. It was all very crude and hard to read, but that was a kind of a pioneering thing we did in 1956. You'd show the approaching squall lines, the thunderstorms, and I don't even know if we knew about hook echoes in those days, things like that that would identify tornadoes, but we were having to show people as much as we could about where these storms were forming. And I used to get a kick out of Oklahoma. They called those storms cyclones down there, whereas in New England, we didn't use the term cyclone. We used the term tornado. So cyclone was a term that I'd only heard like in The Wizard of Oz, like when Dorothy talked about a cyclone out in Kansas. And so it was interesting that we were able to bring to the attention of the people of this new way of forecasting tornadoes by using the radar.
Well, Frank Wachowski, how was your weather forecasting different from Harry's?
About the same. Actually, most of the information back in the 50s came over a teletype, 40 words a minute. And we called it surface observations. Today they call it METARs. And this data used to come in every hour, about 1 minute after the hour. And we would take this stuff off, and we had a blank map, and we plotted each individual station, and later it was analyzed, and this is what the forecasts were based on.
That's right. It was a tedious task, but you had to have plotters that could, do this stuff pretty fast. This all seems like such ancient history.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I'm sure you didn't have the green screen. Is that what it's called, Barry, the green screen?
Yeah, the chroma key wall, right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, and when you guys were formulating your forecast before you went on air, how much time did you have really to let's say there was something happening out in the western part of the state and was coming fast. How did you alert people then to what was going on?
Well, you just interrupted the program. That was the rule. I remember one of the incidents in Oklahoma. I had 15-minute weather shows on Sunday. I had an afternoon 15-minute and an evening 15-minute, and I would cover every state in the Union. I was like an early day weather channel because, of course, we didn't have the weather channel then, but I tried to cover the whole country because I had so much time to fill. Anyway, we would interrupt the program, and one night we had boxing or wrestling, I forget which was all on what we call kinescopes. That was before we had videotape. I interrupted the boxing match, and it was in about the last round of the fight. I just announced an all clear, because in those days we were supposed to get on the air and announce the all clear so people would know when to come up out of the ground. I interrupted the fight, and when we went back to the fight, it was all over, and nobody knew who won. I got my first batch of hate mail.
Well, let's move up just a little bit to the middle generation here with Barry Brandt here in Little Rock. Barry, from what you're hearing from Harry Volkman and Frank Wachowski, how's that different from your weather world?
Well, you know, when I was at the University of Kansas, which is where I got my degree, a lot of the things that they're talking about, I kind of dabbled in that older generation just a little bit because, yeah, you had to plot isobars. You had to take a look at the barometric pressure readings across the country and then draw the lines of equal pressure. And I kind of came in right at the forefront of when computer technology in the mid to late 80s was just emerging, really. Just some of the more crude in the 80s, the graphic systems that were, well, they were rudimentary. And the download rates when you got satellite images or radar images, because nobody had their own radar at that time, or very few. Might have been a few in Oklahoma, but they didn't have their own radar or satellite imagery, and you had to download that. Talk about slow downloads, a 1,200 baud rate modem, or you had to dial in by hand and then let the modem do its very slow work to get a very low-resolution satellite picture that you could show on the air. So I've kind of seen it from the beginning of that era up until now, with interactive computers and the ability to get all the information you need in such a short time. And I think you guys can probably echo me on this, but the amount of time that it takes to make a forecast and the amount of things that you have to look at with all the different models is just unbelievable right now. Whereas Harry and Frank, they had surface analysis from around the country that was probably pretty incomplete even at that. Would you guys say that that's the case?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. We didn't have any of that stuff. We had to use our own meteorological training, our understanding of the atmospheric processes and motions and so forth, and then our experience, just come up with our best shot at it.
Let's bring Scott Larimar in here from the Weather Channel on the radio division there. Scott, speaking from that younger generation perspective, did you pretty much come of age with most of the technology pretty well developed?
Yeah, I really did. My undergraduate work at University of North Carolina in Asheville, we had to plot isobars, and we had to know how to, what isoplething was and how to analyze meteorology data. But we did that in one class, and then everything else we basically used, the computer had already, in a sense, resolved the answer for you as far as analyzing raw data. I teach meteorology right now at Georgia Tech, in addition to working here at the Weather Channel, and I actually teach met analysis and forecasting to sophomore meteorology students at Georgia Tech. And it's a very small part of my class, but it is a very foreign concept to all of them, the early 20-something-year-old folks that are coming through now getting their bachelor's degree in meteorology. I think they all look at me like I'm crazy when I tell them to actually sit down and analyze a pressure map for an area, because they know it's already done for them, and there's so many places that it's already done for them.
And it's not very much fun to sit there and analyze a map, is it?
You know, when you find those troughs and ridges, you have a sense of accomplishment.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Scott, let me ask you a question about the technology then. Is there a technology that you guys pretty much have disregarded or will be cast out?
The Weather Channel is kind of an interesting case. We actually used to convey the local National Weather Service forecast on our local on the 8s. At one time when you actually turned on the Weather Channel back in the 80s and even in the 90s, and we went to your local forecast, you would actually read the text from the National Weather Service. So in a sense, when we started in the 80s and 90s, we weren't really local forecasters. We were national forecasters, even though, of course, we assembled a team of meteorologists here who certainly could do local forecasting. And then in the late 90s and now in where we are now, we actually do generate our own forecast here in this building that we're in, our corporate headquarters here in Atlanta, Georgia. And basically, it is a technique known as ensemble forecasting, where we look at model output from numerous different models, and we weight them based on model performance, and we can statistically tell you which models are doing better this winter or doing better in the convective season. And then we generate point forecasts for hundreds of thousands of points across the world, actually. But we rely largely on this ensemble output. And then our meteorologists can, of course, step in and intervene if something goes wrong, and it does go wrong.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of our program on weather forecasting that we first broadcast back in 2007. The weather messed up our program today that was going to be on loyalty, but we'll be doing that next week. Again, let me remind you, our guests will be Dr. Gary Geisler, Mason Collar, and Dave Woodman. So be sure and join us next week. Our topic will be loyalty. We're talking about weather forecasting today here on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. My guest with me here in the studio is Barry Brandt. He's the weather forecaster here for KATV Channel 7 here in Little Rock. Harry Volkman is retired from Fox Television Weather in Chicago, also WGN. And Frank Wachowski is at Midway Airport there. And then also we have Scott Lorimore joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. He's with the Weather Channel. That sort of takes me to the question I want to ask Harry and Frank in that older generation. Harry and Frank, is there a seat of the pants or a gut feeling about weather forecasting that the younger people or even the middle-aged people don't have that you guys do?
Well, that's a good question. It's hard to recall some of the things that we used to do and rely on and what we did, but Scott talked about the now forecasting. I think what I used was the then forecasting. I was just talking to a professor at Northern Illinois University the other day and told him about how I made a forecast in the early 60s about a snowstorm. It was a low that was intensifying along the middle Gulf Coast. And I looked at the isobaric pattern, which I had been trained to use when I was in Oklahoma, and I could see where the pressure falls were indicating that this was going to head right up the Mississippi Valley, and sure enough, we got a good snow out of it. And one of the local companies, Murray and Treadle, called me and said, how did you do that? How did you forecast? So I said, well, did you follow that isobaric pattern? And I told this professor at NIU, David Chanion, I said, the atmosphere just opens up in that area. It's just like making a hole for that storm to move in. He said, that's a good idea. I think I'll use that in my classes. And it's sort of like, haven't you been following this? It's something like, it's a technique. You don't want to lose the old techniques, but you want to use the new ones and the old ones if they're applicable. The computer's supposed to be able to handle that stuff all right, too.
And I think you have to live in an area, and I know the Weather Channel does an outstanding job as far as the computer point forecasts, and I mean, they've done talking about from the early 80s when it came onto the air. I think you do lose something if you don't have at least some of the anecdotal or the geographic or the, just the other hometown things if you live in an area long enough that you just kind of figure out. Had a guy that was on the air for years in Little Rock, and he didn't have much weather knowledge at all, but he had been on the air doing weather for a long time. And he would tell me every time, he'd say, Barry, now an east wind in Little Rock is a cold wind. And I'd say, yeah, but the guidance says that it's going to be 58. And he'd say, east wind, take it down to 51 for your high temperature today. And, by golly, he was right 75% of the time. And local listeners will remember the name Tom Bonner, but he was anecdotal like that.
From a weather forecasting standpoint, Harry, let me ask you, did you guys ever think or talk about warming of the climate, say, back in the 50s or even early 60s?
Oh, sure. I mean, there were studies made that from 1890s until 1940, we were in a warming cycle that was due to what they call the greenhouse effect. So we've been talking about that for a long time. That goes back to the Industrial Revolution with all the emissions of all the particulates into the atmosphere. So this is nothing new, but it didn't seem to manifest itself so much in the science and in the media until the 80s when we started having some hot years, because as short a time ago as the 70s, we were talking about a climate cooling and going into a nuclear winter and such things as that. So it was just the opposite thing. So we still don't know if this is a long-range effect or if it's going to turn around or what. It's something that we have to be very concerned about, though.
Well, Barry Brandt, in the middle generation, how important is that factor of forecasting global change in you guys' forecasts?
You know, day to day, I don't think it's a great concern to us. The Earth is warming somewhat. I think just as I make my 7-day forecast, though, it's not something that I think about, and it's more of a climatological thing, and climatology is not exactly the exact same as short-term forecasting and meteorology, but the climatology does show a warming. I think there are, as Scott said earlier, a number of things in the atmosphere that we aren't quite sure of yet, and there are certainly cycles that go on in the weather. We've demonstrated that, a cycle of 22 years on the sunspots and how that corresponds with heat and drought over the world. So obviously we've put some pollution into the air, we've increased greenhouse gases, and the climate is changing a little bit. Will it make hurricanes stronger in the future? Perhaps, but I think we're going to go through times when we have real lulls in both the amount and the strength of hurricanes, followed by peaks in that activity too. It's certainly interesting to watch the debate anyway.
Well, Scott Lorimer, and those in the younger generation, and even those that you're teaching in school right now for meteorology, is global warming, is that something that you guys are talking about from a forecast standpoint?
Well, I would have to agree with Barry that from a day-to-day operational meteorology standpoint, it probably does not enter into our factors of producing a short-term forecast, but it is very important to the younger generation. That would be my take on it. My students are definitely interested in it. Research that the Weather Channel has showed indicates that our younger audience is very interested in the topic of global warming, and so we actually started a show with Dr. Heidi Cullen, our climate expert here on Sundays, called The Climate Code, and that airs every Sunday afternoon. And she explores these very topics about what does it mean, what could it mean, what are the possibilities, do humans actually are in control here, are there things that we can do to curb global warming, or is that just not something that matters?
Well, now, you guys have talked a little bit about accuracy and forecasting there, and I'd like to take this idea of global change in terms of accuracy. Well, Frank, have you been keeping any records on how accurate you've been on the forecasts?
No, I lost those last week.
Good
one
man.
Thing I want to add about global warming, my colleague and friend Tom Skilling said the jury's still out on it, but you know what? We only have 135 years of climatology records for Chicago, and they're not the best in the world. We moved four times from the lakefront to the university to Midway and now O'Hare Field, so it's like apples and oranges trying to figure out Chicago itself. And I know that this has taken place over the United States. At least 10 or 15 stations have the same problem.
Well, I didn't mention it in the intro, but I believe, Frank, you're one of 11 people that received, I guess, what's called the Thomas Jefferson Award in meteorology?
Yes, I got the John Campus Award, and then a few years later I got the Thomas Jefferson Award. I even got a call from Thomas Jefferson.
Well, now, and let me move the conversation into a little more dangerous area talking about weather here. Let me direct this to Scott Lorimer and the younger generation. Women in weather forecasting. Our discussion today is amongst the male side of forecasting there, but when I watch television and even hear it on the radio, I hear a lot of women in the forecast. Is that something you guys are dealing with on a fair basis, or what are they just taking over?
It's fine by me.
In the early days of broadcasting and radio, I'm sure the other fellows wouldn't remember this, but there used to be a general feeling, and this sounds a very like a male or sexist comment, but they used to say people don't like to hear women's voices. And there was a long, long time that women were occasionally, you know, giving cooking recipes or doing some style shows, but it was a long time before women were even thought, you know, that they could be on the air. A lot of women didn't go into weather. If they were interested in weather and math and things like that in school, they were not encouraged by counselors and teachers and parents to go into science or weather. It was a different time then.
You know, I've taught Georgia Tech for 5 years, and each year I see the sophomore meteorology students come through, and I can tell you my class size generally ranges between 15 to 20 or so, and every year there are just one or two females in my class and the rest are males. So it is a male-dominated field.
Barry, how do you take the women in the weather forecasting business?
Well, I always say, and my experience 20 plus years ago was the same as Scott's in college, but yeah, there were a handful of girls, But that handful of girls, if they were attractive at all, and they had an on-air presence, and they had a degree in meteorology, wow, what a combination. And I think it's probably still the same right now.
I would like to ask you one kind of philosophical question. Do you guys ever, since you're so wrapped up and passionate about weather forecasting, have you ever thought about how weather has changed history?
Oh, good gosh. I have a great interest in history and always have, and I've read a lot about the trials and tribulations of George Washington at Valley Forge and with Napoleon in Europe and his retreat from Moscow in the snow. And you go through the battles of World War II, like the Battle of the Bulge, where the Germans used their knowledge of weather to when the skies were going to be so overcast that American planes couldn't fly, and they made great inroads against us. So weather has been used in a lot of battles and countries. It's a fascinating study. In the French Revolution, was partly caused by a heat and drought that killed everything, and the people were starving. And there are innumerable stories of weather and climate and its influence in history.
Barry?
Yeah, I think momentous weather events are the high points of history in the United States, from large killer tornadoes to hurricanes that have made landfall of note. Obviously, Katrina recently, and the one, but it really is. They are the things I think that more than a lot of political stories or stories of economy. Really stand out in people's mind, and we can all kind of come together as Americans as we had to kind of go through this thing.
Mm-hmm. Scott Lorimer, how does that philosophical question hit you?
I think there's a tendency now for the younger generation to forget how important weather can be, and I think Katrina really brought that to light for the younger generation. I really think that was a reminder that, hey, there is still a force on this planet that can totally change everything. I think that was powerful to me, to see how everyone reacted to Katrina, especially the younger generation, how it was like, wow, that really can still happen today? Absolutely it can.
Well, I guess the difference between then and now is the word forecasting, which is what you guys have spent your careers doing or are doing in the case of Scott. And it's been a very interesting discussion talking about forecasting. My guests have been with me here today. Harry Volkman from the Chicagoland area was with Fox WFLD there and also WGN in Chicago for about 50 years plus, wasn't it, Harry?
56 years I was with CBS and NBC also.
And Frank Wachowski, who's at Midway Airport, has been in the weather forecasting business since 1946. Frank, I've been glad to have you with us here today.
Thank you.
Barry Brandt, you'll be able to watch on the weather forecast here locally on Channel 7, KATV, all the time. We really appreciate what you do, Barry, in that middle generation, too.
My pleasure.
And Scott Lorimer joined us from Atlanta, Georgia, speaking from the Weather Channel there in the radio division. Scott, many years of hopefully a successful career ahead for you guys there.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks for having us.
Again, I want to remind those of you listening, if you'd like to hear the longer version of our program, go to KUAR.org. You'll be able to hear all the stuff I had to edit out on weather forecasting. And our half-hour program only has half of the detail that we do in the podcast, so you'll want to go there and catch that. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this rebroadcast of our program back in 2007 on weather forecasting with Scott Larimore from the Weather Channel, Barry Brandt from KATV, and those of you from the Chicagoland area, the name Harry Volkman. I'm ready for spring. I don't know about you, and I hope we don't have any more problems getting our programs recorded. Again, our program next week will be on loyalty with our guest, Dr. Gary Geisler, one of our professors here at UALR in marketing, along with our younger generation guest, Mason Collar, a student here at UALR, and one of our best-known longtime TV personalities here in Little Rock, Dave Woodman, will be our older generation guest. This will be a terrific program on loyalty, so be sure and join us next week. Thanks for listening this evening, and we'll see you then. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.